Chapter 6. I knew that Alan would still be ahead of me, so I went to get the ferry from Torosay to Kinlochaline the next morning. The skipper of the ferry was called Neil McCrob, another name from Alan's clan. Alan had sent me to Torosay to take the ferry, so I was eager to speak to McCrob about his kinsman privately. The crowded ferryboat made it impossible to talk to him alone, and the journey was a long and slow one. There was no wind, so the ferry had to be rowed, but the passengers were happy to help, and the people sang Gaelic boat songs as we travelled along. There was only one sour note to our trip, and that was when we saw the exile ship to the American colonies. Men and women were leaning over the sides. They were crying and waving to their friends and family. Most of the passengers on the ferry also knew someone on the boat. Therefore, as we passed, they broke down in tears. When we reached Kinlochaline, I had my chance to talk to McCrob. "Ah, you're the lad with the silver button," he said. He was a gentleman of the Highlands too, and wanted only to give me the directions that Alan had left for me. He told me to spend the night in the public inn in Kinlochaline, and then to cross to Ardgor the next day. In Ardgor, I was to stay at the home of John of Claymore, and on the third day, I was to cross the loch at Corran, and the next to Ballacoolish, and then to ask the way to the house of James of the Glens at Orchamindora of Appin. "Avoid the Whigamores, Campbells, and the Red Soldiers if you see any coming. Then lie in a bush until they have gone past," McCrob warned me before he sent me on my way. The inn at Kinlochaline was the most disgusting place that I'd ever seen. I thought that McCrob was punishing me for some reason, but as I stood in the inn, I heard a great storm break outside, and I was glad to be inside. The next day, I met a man called Henderland on the road. He was another catechist, but thankfully very different from the man on Mull. We walked to Kingaerloch together. We stopped to talk to all the wayfarers and workers that we passed. It seemed that Henderland was very well liked in the Highlands. Even so, I didn't tell the catechist much about my journey and said I was only going to Ballacoolish. Henderland told me that he was working amongst the hiding priests and Jacobites. Henderland told me tales about the wicked Highlanders, James Stewart in Duro and Alan Breck. To the people of the Highlands, he was a hero and the right hand of James. To the people of the Lowlands, Alan Breck was a demon that travelled on the wind and would stop at nothing to help the clan of Appin. "Do you think they'll fight?" I asked. "They're supposed to be disarmed, but they are strange people," he shrugged at me. He invited me to stay the night at his house, just a little way past Kinlochaline. After the experience with the first man that had tried to help me and the blind man trying to rob me, I was much more comfortable staying with Henderland than John of the Claymore. It was dark by the time we reached the door of his house on the edge of the loch. We ate porridge and whey for dinner. The next day, he gave me food to carry on the road, but wouldn't take a coin from me. Instead, he offered me sixpence to help me on my way. He found me a man with a boat to carry me across the loch to Ballacoolish and saved me from travelling on the public ferry. In the distance, I saw a lump of scarlet moving down the road, and the boatman told me that the soldiers were going from Fort William into Appin to throw out the tenants of Colin Campbell. Instead of taking me all the way to Ballacoolish, I managed to get the boatman to set me ashore under the wood of Lettermore in Alan's country of Appin. I walked in the wood until I was hungry and then sat down to eat some of the oat bread Mr. Henderland had given me. I thought about the situation I found myself in. I wondered why I was going to meet Alan when I knew that he was an outlaw and probably a murderer, when I could go back south to Essendean. As I sat and thought, four travellers on horses came through the woods. They were leading their horses in single file because the path was narrow. The first man was a gentleman. The second was a lawyer, the third was a servant, and the last was the master of a Highland family. The last wore his tartan, so he was either an outlaw or someone that served the king. If I knew the tartan, I would have known that it was the Campbell tartan. If I knew this, I would know that I was about to meet the Red Fox. The moment that I saw the men, I made up my mind to go through with my adventure. So I stopped them to ask the way to Alcombe. "Why are you looking for Alcombe?" the Red Fox asked me. "I'm looking for the man that lives there," I replied. "Do you think that James is gathering people?" the Red Fox asked his lawyer. I am not one of his people nor yours, but an honest subject of King George, I said coldly. Then why is an honest man so far from his country, looking for the brother of Ardshiel? I should tell you that I am Colin Campbell, and the king's factor in these lands, the Red Fox said with importance. Before I could reply, a shot came from high up in the trees, and the Red Fox fell down dead. The fourth man in the Red Fox's company was the sheriff's officer, and at the sound of the shot, he had turned and fled. The servant and the lawyer both stood over the body of the Red Fox. They cried at his loss. I leapt to my feet and ran up the hill towards where the shot had come from, shouting, "The murderer!" When I burst through the trees, I found the assassin was a man in a black coat with metal buttons and a long fowling piece. When he saw me, the murderer began to run, so I gave chase, but I lost him amongst the rocks. I turned round to look back down on the forest and saw that the red soldiers had arrived and were already coming up the hill after me. £10 if you bring that lad back. He's the accomplice that was posted here to hold us in conversation, the lawyer told the soldiers. I knew that I was now in a new kind of danger. The soldiers spread out. Some of them started to run towards me. Others aimed their guns at me. I stood in the trees and didn't know what to do. Duck, a voice whispered to me from close by in the trees. I didn't know what I was doing, but my body obeyed the instruction I was given. The moment I hit the floor, I heard the firelocks hitting their pans and balls snapping through the birches. I looked around from where I lay and saw that Alan Breck was standing next to me. He didn't give me any greeting, but simply said, "Come." We ran through the trees and down from the mountain towards Balakulish. We kept low in the trees and then crawled through the heather. He moved so quickly that I struggled to keep up, and my heart felt like it was going to burst from my chest. I didn't have time to think or breathe as we moved. Quarter of an hour later, Alan stopped and lay flat in the heather. "If you want to live, do exactly what I do," he said to me. We moved back the way we had come at the same speed, but with much more caution than before. Eventually, we came back to the trees at the top of the wood where we stood and both lay panting on the floor. "You killed him," I cried, when I'd recovered enough to speak. "I will tell you that if I was going to kill the Red Fox, I wouldn't do it with a sword or gun, and I wouldn't do it in the lands of my people," Alan told me coldly. "Well, that is true," I said. "I swear that I had no part in this," Alan said. "Thank God," I sighed with relief. "Do you know the man that did it?" "No, I happened to be tying my shoe when he ran by me, so I didn't see him properly," Alan replied with a grin. "Well, we must flee, or we will be tried by the Campbells for murder. We will only be safe away from here," he told me. We decided to go to the lowlands, and I was happy to go, especially as I wanted to have the upper hand over my uncle. We would have to go through the wilds and live like outlaws until we were safe in the lowlands. Alan disappeared for a moment to look at what the redcoats were doing. When he came back, he was happy that they were looking in the wrong place and would soon give up. We sat down to eat until the redcoats left. We told each other what had happened in our lives since we were on the brig. Alan told me that two of the men drowned in their berths on the ship, but Hoseason, Mr. Riak, and the others had made it off the ship. When they were ashore, Hoseason ordered his men to kill Alan, but Mr. Riak fought off his shipmates and told the Jacobite to run. He didn't know what had happened to them after that, but I hoped that Mr. Riak had won and found his way home. I told Alan all that had happened to me, from arriving on the barren island and having to scavenge raw fish from rocks until the fishermen told me how to escape, and how I had followed Alan's trail. I told him of the cheating guide who took 5 shillings from me, and the blind man that tried to rob me on the road. I told him about meeting a MacLean, and then what had happened with the ferries. I even told him about the catechist that had let me stay with him and given me a quicker way to the woods where we now sat together. It was good to see Alan again. Although we disagreed on a great many things, I was not going to leave him because we were both implicated in the murder of the Red Fox. We stayed in the forest until the sun rose, and once it was dark, we made our way to the home of James of the Glens to get food, money, and weapons for our journey south.